Good morning. So similar to what everyone else has said, we're super excited to be here and to be part of the first S3 Con in Asia. And speaking on behalf of LinkedIn, the S3 team has been a huge proponent and fan of the S3 Con conference over the years. We've been involved, just gotten a lot out of it in general. So we're definitely honored and excited to be here today to help kick off the first morning. So VG and I wanted to tell a little bit of an ambitious story, so bear with us, about some of the founding moments of S3 at LinkedIn, and specifically some of the early days of LinkedIn, back when we really struggled to scale and effectively had like some existential crisis moments with the platform, and then some of the how that led to creating the S3 team at LinkedIn. Some of the early decisions that we made that we think helped kind of make that scale better in the future. And one of those was the decision to grow the team into the local region in India specifically. And VG is going to deep dive on some of that and what worked for us scaling the team in India and what didn't. So to get started, just some quick introductions. So again, my name is Bruno Connolly. I lead the SRE team at LinkedIn. I've been there just about 7 years. And my background is pretty evenly split between the ISP world and then the consumer internet space. And for the most part, I've been an SRE of one type or another throughout my career. And specifically, I've had the opportunity to do a good bit of team building in Asia since about 2005. I've helped a couple US-based companies grow into the region as building an SRE presence, both mostly in India and a little bit in Beijing. And VG?
Thank you, Bruno. Good morning. I'm really excited to talk here. My name is Vijay Nair. I joined LinkedIn 2012, and I built the LinkedIn's Bangalore presence. Before that, I was really on the consumer internet space. I've been working in the industry for the last 16 years, mainly on SREs or SRE or similar role. Specifically on locally distributed teams in 2006. So today, I'll talk about how we LinkedIn's Bangalore presence. Assumptions which we made, some of them went wrong, and how did we learn from it and build a great team in Bangalore? Over to Bruno.
All right. So getting started, I'm just curious, how many people are like familiar with the LinkedIn platform? Just help me understand. Okay. Have an active profile, use the platform, some level of, I see where the LinkedIn people are sitting. Okay. Getting to know LinkedIn a little bit, for those that do have an active profile, you've hopefully seen that over the years we have become much more than just a place to hang your profile, hang your resume on the internet, or to get pinged by recruiters, or to get an email every morning encouraging you to grow your LinkedIn profile or accept connection invites that are pinned in for you. And specifically our vision that we talk about internally is we want to create an economic opportunity for every member of the global workforce. And specifically, when we talk about that internally, we talk about the concept of the economic graph, which is mapping, creating a digital representation of every aspect of the global economy as an entity in the LinkedIn graph. So our goal is to have a representation of every member of the global workforce, every company, jobs associated with those companies, all of the skills that you have learned or would need to learn along the way, the schools where you could obtain those, as well as knowledge is one of the more recent entries of the LinkedIn, the economic graph, which is the ability to share information, to make long-form posts on our content publishing platform, or to use the Lynda online training content to get learning data to grow your skills. So since we were in Singapore, I thought it might be kind of fun to just kick off with Singapore's economic graph as represented on LinkedIn. So these are our real-time roughish numbers within Singapore. We represent 1 million members, 80,000 companies, a lot of jobs, and most interesting, the engagement with in terms of conversations, people that are actively using the platform to grow, find opportunity within the local area. So, and then globally, looking at the platform, we've got a decent bit of scale at this point. We have over 500 million members. We just crossed that mark back in April. That was a big milestone for us. And of those, we have more than 100 million that are active on a monthly basis. And the network's still growing. We grow at about 2 signups per second. So it's, we constantly have growth as well as more engagement. And that's been a lot of our focus lately, is really focusing on engagement within the feed and the messaging platform. And year over year, that's we're seeing a lot of growth in those areas. So I think where it gets a little more interesting for us as SREs is understanding behind the scenes some of the infrastructure that we have to deal with to make all this work and some of the complexity that comes from that. So as you'd imagine, we have a lot of constant QPS hammering our edges. We are pretty well down the microservices route in production. So what I mean by that is it's more than 1,000 pieces of individually deployable pieces of software that have to work together in concert to make LinkedIn happen. The social graph, which is effectively kind of the heart of LinkedIn, is scaled to the tune of 60 billion edges at this point. And then back-end understanding the data storage tier at LinkedIn, online data storage is our own homegrown NoSQL data storage built on top of MySQL's InnoDB. And Kafka, which folks may know a little more given it's one of our more popular open source contributions, is effectively the data circulatory system for LinkedIn. So everywhere data needs to get from point A to point B, it goes through a Kafka topic. All the metrics that we use to run the business, operational metrics, as well as just application data, it's how we do data replication across sites. So our Kafka traffic is pretty, is to the tune of trillions of messages per day at this point. So just really quick overview to kind of set up for the story a little bit. We have an edge network at this point. We represent members in over 200 countries, so we've had to grow our global edge quite a bit to maintain the site speed experience for where the membership grows into new regions. And this is an area where we're still growing quite a bit. And then all of those, of course, funnel into the back-end application footprint, the data center. So we have four major data centers at this point. We've been building one a year for the last 4 years to both kind of refresh as well as just keep up with growth and scale. One of our most recent, coincidentally, is in Singapore. And as you'd expect, these four data centers are active, all take traffic at once, can and do fail regularly, and others will pick up for the ones that fail out. And we've actually gotten pretty aggressive with our disaster recovery strategy at this point, that we do automated force data center failures 3 times a week, every week at peak, to just validate that all of the machinery works and to bubble up issues that always bubble up given the amount of change in our system. And then, of course, our engineering footprint. We have a global engineering presence at this point. We're spread across four offices. Each office has its own unique identity. We'll talk about that a little bit. LinkedIn was founded in the Silicon Valley in California, so our main footprint is in Sunnyvale. We've since grown to Bangalore, post that to New York, and then into San Francisco. So, the fun part. Obviously, not only has LinkedIn not always been at the scale that we're at currently, but we almost didn't make it there. And that was because back in early 2010, we started to have some pretty big existential crisis challenges trying to keep up with the scale that we were seeing at the time. So first, to understand where LinkedIn was back then, we had no edge network. We had two data centers, retail data centers that were super expensive for us to operate. And worse, these were in active-passive mode. So we felt pretty good about data replication between these two data centers, data consistency, et cetera, but only one would be in database mastership mode, and thus only one could take traffic at a time. And as you can imagine, that meant that when we had an issue, we effectively had an outage. And in theory, we could swap traffic between these two data centers by executing a runbook that was this thick, and best case would take 4 hours to execute. And because of that, as you can guess, we never did it. When we had issues, which were regular back then, we would fix forward until we could get things back online. And then so LinkedIn's approach to operations was significantly different back then. And that's kind of a little bit of the heart of the story we wanted to tell, is the fact that we were already at a decent bit of scale, start this transition moving from a traditional operations model to an S3 approach. And we had the challenges that you would have expected. This classical operations approach was super stratified, so there was the sysadmin team, DBAs, application operations. All these teams would work together via tickets, super heavyweight processes, stuff that was hard or impossible to automate. And you could just imagine being an engineer, in order to get basic tasks done day to day from start to finish, you'd have to interface with a bunch of different teams and maybe wait for somebody to close a ticket. It was super frustrating. But beyond that, what was worse and I think hopefully a little unique to LinkedIn is there was this really strong distrust between the operations team and the dev team. Distrust to the level of developers didn't have access to anything. Could not log into production environments, could not log into non-production environments, didn't have access to data and metrics. And the distrust was so strong that it even like manifested in physical ways. Cabinets would have dual rack switches and be dual home machines because people wouldn't trust software to gracefully degrade or fail. So instead, we would solve for those problems by adding both cost and worse complexity. And obviously, that frustrated a lot of folks. And so behind all of that, there was one ops team that was my team at the time. It was called Side Operations. It was seven people that ran all of LinkedIn and did everything from tier zero knockish stuff to SRE stuff. And what it was kind of heavily becoming was release operations. The way LinkedIn did code pushes back then was once every 2 weeks, we would push a giant chunk of changes all at once. If you were lucky enough to get your code committed to the right branch at the right time, it would go out, and then we would figure out what would work and what wouldn't in one fell swoop when we would push this into production in like this 5-hour heroic effort. And you know, like all the typical problems that you would expect, there would be backwards incompatibility issues, so you'd get so far, and then you'd have to fix forward because there was a schema change. Like it was a nightmare. And it reached the point where the side ops team was pretty much splitting their time between either fighting fires to do knock stuff and keep the site up or to make this release happen. And then on top of all that, the on-call experience was absolutely horrible. And it was so bad. So the way it worked back then is there was a physical device, a BlackBerry, that folks would pass between each other. And if it was your on-call week, you'd take the BlackBerry, you would take it home, and it would proceed to torture you to the tune of like 3 pages per 5 minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it was so bad that people would literally train their spouses and significant others to help triage stuff so they could take a nap and then get nudged awake. Hey, I think LinkedIn may be having a problem. And that's true. So what was happening back then was the platform was seeing more growth than it had ever seen before. And the proxy that I like to use for this is member growth, so members on the platform. And as you can see in 2010, that's when, and this is again, I think a little unique to LinkedIn, that's when we started to see the growth and the knee of the growth curve for the first time. And because of this, like there was a lot of goodness, right? More activity on the site meant more excitement about creating new product features, which meant hiring more engineers, and like we're pouring all this fuel on this fire of a site that we're at this point kind of barely able to keep up. So we knew that we were hopeful that we had a lot of growth in front of us based on what we saw, but again, we're building this in internet years on a pretty old company. It was 7 years old at that point, so we had this big pile of technical debt, to a certain extent cultural debt, and frankly, just like a bunch of decisions that were made that made sense at the time for how LinkedIn was operating, but did not make sense in this new world of dealing with all this growth. So when you add all this up, what this meant was we had a lot of side outages. And if you did use LinkedIn prior to, I think, 2012 or 13, you probably saw the fail wizard, or the wizard of N. So our peak traffic periods back at that point were very US-based. We would see, when both the US East Coast and West Coast would wake up in the morning, that's when we'd see our heavy traffic. So Monday through Wednesday, like 6 a.m. to 10 a.m.-ish is when that would kick off. And it reached the point where literally every Monday through Wednesday we would have an outage. And we spent a good chunk of 2010 and frankly even into 2011 dealing with those on a regular basis. And the main triggers were the stuff that you'd expect. In addition to this like day over day, week over week, biggest traffic we've ever seen in our lives, this is all happening on a stack that has zero instrumentation anywhere, no failure degradation, every piece of software expecting that every other piece of software is always going to work. And then on top of that, those biweekly releases I mentioned, we would also take the site down for them. So we decided maybe we should change a few things. And in reality, we actually had to change a lot of things. And I think there's a whole other kind of underlying story here that we could talk about in a lot of different ways. Like we made so many changes in the infrastructure that we actually shut product development down for 3 months and refocused 100% of the engineering presence on making infrastructure changes. And that was everything from like just how code was, how we committed code at LinkedIn. We moved from a branch-based model to a trunk-based model. But all of the underpinnings change that we had to make to move to an active-active model, for example. More point-focused things, like we wanted to remove hardware load balancers out of the stack because they were a pain in the ass to scale and super expensive. So what I wanted to talk about a little bit was specifically the part of this that led us to the founding of the SRE team and the rebranding of the SideOps team to SRE and some of the changes that we made as part of that. And again, specifically a few of the early decisions we made that served us pretty well, and then we'll dive into Bangalore. So first, we aligned on three kind of core principles that it was very it's surprisingly easy to get the entire engineering team and company on board with to kind of guide our transition. So the first was that SideOp was now going to be the clear number one priority for us. Every decision that we would make as a company and as an engineering team would be putting SideOp operability, scalability, resilience first. Again, this was super easy because at this point, the entire engineering team was relatively fed up with the member experience that we were creating, and the executive team was also super supportive, so this is a pretty easy thing for us to do. The second was we wanted to empower ownership across all of engineering and end these days of not trusting folks and do the complete opposite, get people, all engineers, folks that are writing application code as well should have access to everything. If their code is deployed somewhere, they should have access to it. They should be able to deploy it. They should be on call. It shouldn't just be the ops team. We were doing this all together. We wanted to move to a model like self-service and guardrails. And then the third, of course, is that operations is an engineering problem. We wanted to pivot both our approach to, instead of heavyweight processes and manual work, to start writing code to solve operations problems, as well as pivoting how we hired, and that's when we started hiring software engineers into the team, and again, that led to the SRE transition. So really briefly, just a few early decisions that we made that that we think treated us well. The first was, we wanted to get out of this model of being the release operations team and deal with this constantly, this constant bi-weekly release. So that was the first concept was everybody should be able to deploy code. If you're an engineer at the company, if you're writing code, you should be able to deploy it, but you should be able to do it safely and not require working with other folks to make that happen. So we introduced a self-service deployment system. And this is, the system still exists pretty much to the same extent this day. To this day, it hasn't had to evolve a lot. And there were a few kind of core components that we decided we wanted to do initially to try to build guardrails to make folks feel comfortable with it. The first was the concept of canarying, which is pretty straightforward. So we wanted anyone to be able to push a button and deploy code into production and have it first go to a single instance receiving live traffic, production traffic immediately. And then we built a super simple metrics validation service that would just compare new code to old code and be able to make a decision of roll forward or roll back based on base level application metrics, OS metrics, et cetera. And then post that. If it was a roll forward decision, roll it out to an entire data center, post a time-based period, roll it out further. But the second piece to this that we wanted to do was extending our AV system effectively to infrastructure as well. So we moved to a model of putting all new code paths, all new features effectively, behind the same AV system. So we could then leverage AV to ramp, actually turn new code paths off. So all new code paths would be configured off by default, and we'd turn them on a targeted per member, per team, per the company, slowly ramp through the member base. And this alone, once we had this model once we moved into this model for the majority of the production changes, the amount of stability that we got out of the site was huge, as well as the amount of time that we bought back for the SRE team to work on other challenges. So the second early decision was creating a culture of metrics. And the phrase that we threw around a lot back then was, what gets measured gets fixed. And this, super simple concept. We wanted metrics to be free. We wanted people to be encouraged to instrument. So we built a self-service instrumentation platform that where application developers, as they go, could annotate their code with whatever instrumentation they would like. The next time they would deploy via the self-service deploy system, the metrics would magically show up. They could visualize. They could set alerts. They could have data and actually understand how their app was performing in production. Later, we built an API on top of this, and that, of course, you know, opened up this whole world, this whole other ecosystem of tools that were developed around the metric system, which still are kind of the heart of how a lot of operations work at LinkedIn today. But there were two takeaways from this that we didn't necessarily expect. The first was how much it really made a difference of pulling the application development team into this process. You know, for folks that are going through this transition of trying to figure out how to get software engineers more pulled into to what's happening in production, like this, it was night and day how much people really wanted to get involved when they knew how their app was performing. The second was that the S3 team built this, so we, you know, we built the system, wrote the software, and as we had, part of the transition that we had to go through was really changing the perception of S3 at LinkedIn as an engineering team and a peer engineering team. And that this ended up playing much more of a role in that than we had anticipated. It wasn't the goal. And then the final early decision I want to talk about just briefly was that we knew we didn't want a NOC permanently. Definitely, we didn't want to go the traditional NOC approach. But to kind of stop the bleeding, we had to build one. So we did build a tier one NOC back in the early days that did everything that the classical NOC would do, the looking at graphs, the calling people on the phone, the executing runbooks to try to resolve things. In retrospect, it was a good decision to help us kind of stop the bleeding. But we knew we didn't want to do it forever. So in parallel, we started a few efforts in the background. So continuing on our self-service approach, we built a self-service auto-remediation platform and escalation platform. Our auto-remediation platform at LinkedIn is called Nurse. We've talked about it a few times externally, and it's effectively workflow automation. So in code, you can put what you would put in a runbook and replace what we were having the NOC do. Our auto-escalation system, I think we're going to announce the open sourcing in a couple days at Monitorama. We're kind of excited. We're hoping that others might want to build a community around this. So if that's something you're interested in, I encourage you to look it up. It's called Iris, and it's effectively the internal, it's how on-call and escalation works at LinkedIn, including, you know, automated escalation paths to Slack and voice and text and all the stuff that you would expect. So we built these systems. This was more recent in our journey. It was just in the past year or two that we finally drew a line in the sand and said, check it out, SRE teams, application developers. The NOC is not going to exist for you anymore. And the stuff that you're leveraging the NOC for, you're going to take on yourself. And we recommend that you use this platform to handle auto-remediation for the things that you're having the NOC do to make it easier for yourself as you did it. And we thought there was going to be more pushback on this, and this was going to be tougher to pull off. And what we found out is it was actually pretty easy because, again, everyone at the end of the day really wanted this. But again, there were a couple takeaways that we didn't expect. One was this led us to the concept of creating what we now call the production SRE team at LinkedIn, which is an SRE team that is part of the NOC and works with the NOC and is solving NOC problems, but as an SRE and writing software to solve these problems. So an example, like some of the disaster recovery automation that I mentioned earlier, that all came from the existence of this team. And then the second was this led to a career transformation program. We used the opportunity to identify NOC folks that were interested in getting more exposure to an SRE role and were interested in pursuing it, and we built a pretty rich platform behind that, a mentorship platform, a training platform, a way to skill these folks up, and this actually created a whole new pipeline for us, which, as we were trying to scale the team back in the early days, turned out to be pretty helpful. And on that note, I'll hand over to BG to talk about some of the decisions we made on the scaling side and hiring, and specifically the decision to scale into India and how we think that made a big difference for us.
To recap a bit on what Bruno has mentioned, we started our SRE presence in 2010. To ensure like our infrastructure is coping up with the hyper growth we are having. We had 7 years of tech debt, and we are also doing a lot of fight. So we realized that the teams weren't scaling. So they were doing 24/7 rotations, and people were burning nights. So we started thinking about going global. So we want to pick something which is less dependent and can operate without having much dependency with US. So we decided to take NOC as an opportunity. And we started late 2011 to follow the Sun model. So we also knew that follow the Sun model may not actually work for a lot of SRE teams because the SREs of course require a lot of input work. So we had this aspiration. So that is when I got hired in 2012 to take this vision forward to establish an SRE team in Bangalore. So we knew from our experience and even we for building this up, we should ensure like there is enough meaningful work and people should be engaged. So we decided to come up with some grounding principles. There are three grounding principles. Follow the Sun should be the goal. So if you're extending a team to just only doing 12/7 rotations, that is not going to work. People should be having enough meaningful and engaging work. So, if you do meaningful and engaging part right, then you will get the on-call as a byproduct. It shouldn't be the primary goal. We also want to start something simple. We want to pick a team which has less dependency with US and also has autonomy to build a system which can improve efficiency, developer productivity, etc. So we also had a lot of experience from our past building SREs in LinkedIn, also our previous organizations. We want to ensure like, so we follow the same culture, same philosophy, same hiring bar, and same everything. So now, so we have some grounding principles. We have a playbook which we learned from our previous experience and building SREs at LinkedIn. So we decided to hire the teams. But things did not work the way which we expected. So hiring was much challenging than we expected. So we had a proven hiring model with US. So we had a proven hiring machine which can produce SREs, but that did not work well for India. The US hiring model was mainly focused towards SREs. So they were hiring senior SRE talent there. In India, the talent pool was pretty good, pretty amazing. But it was not focused towards SREs. A lot of people could not actually pass our interview bar. We were looking for software engineers. They can actually solve infrastructure challenges for us. We want people to write code to solve scalability issues, performance issues, a lot of other things. So what we did is we did three things. We started hiring based on potential and passion, and started conducting a lot of internal training programs to level them up. And now we need to produce our own SREs. We started going to campuses. So one of the first companies went to campus to hire SREs where no one heard about this role before. I still remember an incident. I was giving a talk in one of the campuses in the southern part of India. So after the talk, a lot of students gathered around. One particular individual was asking too many questions. So are you a maintenance engineer? Are you a system administrator? Are you a DBA? So I said, yeah, so we pretty much do everything. Plus we do a bunch of coding to solve other amazing problems. So his eyes blew up. So we hired him. He is a senior engineer with us, solving amazing challenges for us. So the ELT hiring model got us to a better spot in creating the pipeline. We also came up with one more thing. So we started hiring some junior engineers to our NOC and started training them and also provided an opportunity for transforming their career to an SRE or some other roles in LinkedIn. So these are the three things got us to a better spot on the hiring pipeline. So we also faced some additional challenges. So there was a negative association with this title in the market. It was often conceived as NOC. So DevOps conceived positively, opposite the other way in different places. Our talent acquisition teams also faced a lot of challenges. So they never hired SREs before. So their keyword search started failing. They were actually often confused with the different titles of system administrator, network engineer. We had to spend a lot of time working with the TA team to ensure like they start looking at the profile the same way which we do. So what we did is like we started connecting to other leaders in the market, so on the same space. So initially, a lot of people started ignoring us because they did not find much value. Because they were not hiring SREs, but some guys started responding. Then we figured out immediately that we have common challenges. So we formed a community to address some of these hiring challenges, unifying this role, unifying the profile, how we can actually address the skill gaps, etc. So there is one more challenge. there was a preconceived notion of how US companies operate in India. This was mainly coming from the senior engineers. So these guys thought like, yeah, this is a typical operational task. There is not much value addition. They were looking for challenging and meaningful work. They wanted to solve problems which can add value to their career. So we spent considerable amount of time teaching India what an SRE means to us. So we started participating in conferences. We started organizing conferences in-house. So we conducted multiple meetups, training programs, et cetera, et cetera. So we also started connecting people in a personal level on different pubs and bars over drinks, explaining them like, hey, we are doing something different. We are adding a lot of value to the organization, and started showcasing some amazing stuff which we have done out of Bangalore. That created a lot of traction. So the key takeaway from this particular lessons are, so you may not be able to apply the hiring model which you learned from a different geography to a different other geographies. So we need to actually just leverage other resources, probably invest in junior talent and ELTs, and also start talking to the community. You may not be alone. So there may be other people, they are actually facing the same problem. So now, so we kind of addressed the hiring related issues. And the next step, obviously, let's go and hire more SREs and build teams. So we thought like, end of the day, success should look like something like a mirror copy of what US has. So we need to actually just mirror teams one-on-one and also kind of replicate the entire org structure in Bangalore. That did not work well. So it actually created a lot of disengagement because these people were not having enough engaging work to do, because we are actually more focused towards one-on-one mapping between teams, even in the headcounts as well as the org structure. So it caused a lot of disengagement. So we really need to focus on like what are the problems which can address from that particular region and focus towards that. So maybe infrastructure and platform related challenges may be a unique opportunity where we can add a lot of value, because these systems won't go through much changes and we have the autonomy to make changes during our business hours. We also started experimenting with a lot of different org model, which may not necessarily work in headquarters, because a lot of legacy setup, shaking the org structure may create a lot of friction. But we were able to experiment here and by focusing on meaningful and engaging work, and was able to ensure like the team is engaged. So we also thought, similar to US, this team will be heavily interrupt driven, because a lot of site related changes happens in US business hours. So we thought like it might be the same case, but it got us wrong. It was actually more calm in our business hours, because not too many changes are going to production. So we started leveraging this opportunity to build systems that can add value, that can increase operational efficiency, developer productivity, and help address scaling LinkedIn to the hyper growth. So to give you some examples, so we built a tool called DC Manager. DC stands for Data Center Manager. So this takes a bunch of raw hardware, bunch means like tens of thousands as input, and convert it into a full-fledged LinkedIn stack, application stack. So like Bruno mentioned, so we were building one data center per year to cope up with the hyper growth. Only building application and making it live was taking around 4 to 6 months. So DC Manager helped us to brought down the overall build time to 30 days. This was a huge win. So we built another application called InFinder. So this was built for our trust and safety and security team to understand the account abuse across different platforms. So which can be mobile, desktop, or any other handheld devices. So we also built Alert Correlation. This is a framework leveraging machine learning to understand root cause of a problem by analyzing the downstream metrics. There is a talk on this. I strongly encourage you guys to go and attend that. So leveraging this opportunity to build system which can add value to the organization, that's made us a lot of success. So we also identified that certain teams, they were heavily operational focused. So the team was kind of disengaged because they were always doing firefight. So finding the right balance between quality and quantity and ensuring the proactive and reactive work, just focus on opportunity for that particular region. Leverage the talent and focus on that opportunity to build systems which can add value. So key takeaway from this particular lessons are, so don't map one-on-ones. Focus on like what is the value addition which you can create. And also give them hard problems to own. That ownership, that sense of ownership is pretty important. So the team should feel like they're owning something and they're adding value. And also ensure like there is a proper balance between quality and quantity. So now, So we had a hiring problem. We addressed it. We were able to create some pipeline. So we thought like we can actually just mirror teams and build teams, which went wrong. So we learned a lot from there. So now the next step is like, yeah, so we have a pattern. Now let's actually just go and build the fourth team. So it also did not work. One size doesn't fit all. So we need to, we had to curate based on the team's requirement. In this particular case, so this team was, team looked like to us like kind of a perfect candidate for extending remotely. But there were some specific characteristics which you need to look for. So do they understand the time zone challenges, cultural differences, the time investment and commitment they need to do to make it work? So in this particular, that wasn't the case. We also faced challenges with ownership and empowerment. You need to look for the teams, they have demonstrated ability to onboard new people. In this particular case, the team was kind of in an isolated state because they were actually kind of a very specialized team. Not like too many diverse ideas outside their core group was welcomed. The collaboration with other teams were actually not that great. So a proven track record of onboarding somebody with the right ownership and empowering them to take intelligent risk is something really necessary to make the team successful. So the disengagement from the team was going pretty high. So I was having sleepless night because I get a lot of calls saying that, hey, I don't have access to production, so there is a block. I'm unable to actually just perform this task. It seems like they are not trusting me with this particular system. So we started doing a lot of course correction from the leadership side. But things did not work the way which we expected. So the level of disengagement was much higher than the rate of course correction we were doing. So we decided to dissolve the team. That created a lot of other nightmares because other teams started actually picking it up as an example and thought, like, we may actually pull the plug if things did not work. So again, a lot of time spent on explaining people. One good thing what we did is like we owned that responsibility. We went to the team and said like, hey, this is what happened. So we became very transparent with the team. So we accepted our mistake and we said like, yeah, this is something which is we did wrong. That created a lot of trust and helped us to increase the morale of the team. So we also extended the opportunity for those team members to pick any team which they want based on their aspirations. That also helped us increasing the trust in leadership and the morale of other teams. So key takeaways, ensure like the team you are focusing on, they have a demonstrated ability to collaborate and also proven track record of onboarding somebody and trusting them with the equal ownership, delegation, etc. And mistakes will happen. Ensure like you own it and be transparent and fix it as quickly as possible. So this is how Bangalore looks like today. So we have 60 plus SREs across 10 different teams. So we have 100 plus application developers. And we also created our identity, so our unique identity. We owned the messaging platform for LinkedIn, the platform which owns SMS, push notification, and emails. So a couple of things which I'm personally excited about. So LinkedIn is all about creating opportunity for the global workforce. So in India, so it's a mobile-first economy, but the internet penetration is around roughly 30%, and mobile penetration is around 65 to 75%. So the connectivity outside the main cities were actually not that great. There was slow connection, so sometimes it doesn't actually just connect to sites and all. So what we did, we created a lighter version of LinkedIn, specifically more on the server side rendering. It was a pretty light, and people were able to actually load this on their normal mobile devices very quickly. So we were able to connect those kind of people they never had access before to the right opportunity using our platform. So created a lot of user engagement. Similarly, in India, in campus recruitment mainly happens on main cities and main campuses. The mainstream companies generally don't go to the other unknown campuses or kind of, we call it as tier two cities. So we created a platform. It's a common ground for all companies and students and universities can come and participate. Companies can post their jobs there and take tests and ensure like this opportunity is extended to the entire campus world. So we are also making some investment on the blue collar space where the skilled labor market, so it's disorganized in India. So we want to actually just connect those disorganized market also with the right opportunity. So there are two things here, creating that unique identity by owning the messaging platform for LinkedIn and also leveraging this opportunity by leveraging the local dynamics and skill set to build something which is local for that particular market was really an amazing thing.
So I'm going to click and start working, it seems.
So this is SREs globally today. So we have four locations. The learning from Bangalore definitely helped us to create our New York and San Francisco presence. So these two centers also has their own identity right now. New York owns our video platform. San Francisco owns our content platform. So key takeaways, directionally good decisions hasn't failed us yet. Moving to Bangalore was a big decision. Putting developer on call was a big decision. And also doing self-service deployment and enabling everyone to actually just from the engineering to deployment was a big decision. So sometimes we thought of like, yeah, it's too much of change. We got a lot of pushback too. But taking these intelligent risks, aligning to our core principle, got us to a very, very good spot. And also, you need to ensure like there is a unique identity created for all these centers. You need to leverage the local talent and focus on opportunities and build system which can add values. And yes, of course, it takes the entire village. You need to get everybody on board. So in LinkedIn, SREs are involved from inception to decommission for every service. So if you are actually start thinking about an idea which is going to get converted into a service, so we involve from early design phase itself. So we ensure like whatever the development team is creating, it is operable, meeting all the performance expectations, scalability expectation from the start which we are expecting. So fostering that, the culture of building it together, so that got us to a really good spot. Yes, this was hard. So moving away from a heavily operational based day-to-day to a completely engineering driven world was pretty amazing. So we are actually just going to continue our journey. We are going to make more assumptions. We are going to take more intelligent risk, aligning to our core principle, which is site up, empower developer ownership, and also sorry, I lost the last one. Give me one sec. Sorry, I'll go back. Sorry about that. I'm a little bit lost on the context. Operations is an engineering problem. So these were our core principles. Aligning to these, the intelligent risk which we taken has got us to a better spot. Thank you so much. Me and Bruno will be around for taking questions.